studio. Here's Steve Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
All right, everybody. Happy Thursday, May 9th. Man, we're getting through the month of May already. 9 days in here on Sports Talk. He's Adrian Broaddus. I'm Steve Kaplowitz. Good to have you here for the next 2 hours, 30 minutes. Taking you right up to 6:30. Then it's Tim Haggerty live from Southwest University Park getting us ready for Game 3 of the six-game homestand between the Chihuahuas and the Albuquerque Isotopes. Excited about that. Hey, by the way, if you want to go Sunday and spend Mother's Day with us at Southwest University Park for a 12:05 game, and you have not registered yet for our free Mother's Day contest with Sports Talk, what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? Do you know how excited we would be to have you as our guests? We would love it, but you got to sign up, because if you don't sign up, you can't win. Chance to go to the suite with us, hosting you for El Paso and Albuquerque, 12:05. All you got to do to sign up is download our free 600 ESPN El Paso app. It's free. It's easy. You can go to the app store, type in KROD or 600 ESPN El Paso, and you'll see the app. And it's a really nice gray app, and it says 600 ESPN El Paso on there. And then once you get the app, you're in. Simple. You can listen to the show in studio quality. You can get all of our articles. You could sign up for notifications if you want those for all the good stories that are written. You can also chat with us in real time, which is how you'll enter the contest. Because all you have to do when you click the chat feature on the app is tell us why the mom in your life should go this Sunday with us. That's it. It could be your wife. It could be your mom. It could be a friend. Hey, if you're the mom and you want to sign up, give it a go. It could be you. All you got to do is tell us why you want to be there with us, and somebody's winning tomorrow. We're picking a winner tomorrow, Adrian, and they're going to go to the game.
This is awesome stuff. We've got some great submissions so far. We've had some touching ones, too. Some people telling us, you know, that the mom in their life is like the full force of the whole family household. They work, you know, they do so much, and this is a great way to reward mom on Mother's Day by joining us out at the suites at the Southwest University Ballpark, and it's going to be a lot of fun. 80 degrees Sunday, beautiful day. So yeah, it should be a lot of fun out there.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. That's my escape. And you know what? I've never spent Mother's Day at the ballpark before. I'm excited about this Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, what a weekend, right? I mean, they've got those awesome rope hats that they're giving away tomorrow out for the El Paso Chihuahuas this weekend, Mother's Day weekend. Of course, fireworks celebration on Saturday. So I think they're wrapping up this homestand in a real positive way.
Love it. So please, sign up if you haven't done so. Get it done today, because otherwise you're going to run out of time. And we're not going to have the opportunity to possibly give you the prize. And it's great. I mean, all it takes is just loading up the app and submitting it via the chat feature. That's it. There's nothing else to it than that. And I'm telling you what, somebody's going to be a very lucky individual, because they're going to be a part of this contest. They're going to win. And they're going to have four tickets to the suite, food, catered. Also, they're going to have parking. A lot of great stuff happening with this.
A lot of perks, Steve. If you've never been up there in the suites, is a great opportunity to do so for all our listeners out there. Just enter in, and you might get a chance to come out and join us.
That is right. That is right. All right. Oh, by the way, Adrian, I have to order the food by tomorrow. So that means you and I are going to be picking.
Nice.
We're going to be picking out what we're going to be putting out there in the suite.
I'm looking forward to it, man. That sounds great.
Me too. Me too. So we'll get that done here in just a little bit. All right. 505-6009. That is our telephone number, 505-6009. We're excited about having you call into the show today. We got a lot of day baseball. We have hockey tonight, NBA tonight. I watched, by the way, I watched the Knick game last night. You know, Rick Carlisle can complain all he wants about the officiating and how it's so one-sided against his team. Let me tell you something, all right? The Knicks are playing with seven players. Last night, Jalen Brunson missed the entire second quarter. Comes back in the second half. In the fourth quarter, they don't have another one of their mainstays who has been who was huge last night when Brunson was out. In fact, when OG Anunoby carried the team and then missed the whole fourth quarter, you know, you're missing two guys that are big, big players on this team, and you didn't beat them. So, you know what? It wasn't like the Knicks still were healthy the entire game. They were down, and they still came out on top. So, if you're Rick Carlisle, please. I mean, you can complain all you want. You can whine about the calls. The fact is, try taking away Halliburton for one or two quarters, and let's see how the Pacers are doing trying to win a game against the Knicks.
Yeah, I'd be over at that point because he was really the only one who was carrying the way for the Pacers. I just felt like, you know, Brunson was just, as soon as he came out in the second half, it felt like the whole city of New York stood up and was applauding and excited
yep.
for that one right there. I mean, DiVincenzo, Steve, is such a fun player to watch. Hartenstein was making the nice low post buckets. It's just Josh Hart flexing on people and saying bad words and expletives to Reggie Miller.
Well, the fans, too.
And the fans. I mean, I love it. I thought that yesterday at the Garden was a real fitting way to finish out. I was thinking third quarter, wow, you know, Knicks might lose this game. The Indiana Pacers might steal one. And the Knicks, the way that they handled things in the last 3 minutes, I mean, that's why you root for this team right here.
Yeah, they were fun. Then they got it done. That's all that matters. They got it done heading back to Indiana. More games coming up, though, tonight, and I do want to talk about these as well because we have coming up Cleveland and Boston in less than an hour, Boston with a one-game-to-none lead, and then that Dallas-OKC series. Oklahoma City leading it so far. Mavericks trying to tie things up. That'll be the late game. And again, I know we're not expecting much out of Cleveland in this series against Boston. I understand that. But Dallas could have a golden opportunity to try to go back home tied at one apiece if they can win on the road.
It'll be tough. I mean, the first game, what we saw from the Thunder, a dominant performance by them. It wasn't just Shea. It was guys like Jalen Williams. He was fantastic. Really like Chet Holmgren. I'm going to continue to hammer that home. He's fantastic. He's playing great. Tonight, it's going to be about the two stars, Luka and Kyrie. How did they respond in the fourth quarter? In game one on Tuesday, both those guys struggled in the fourth quarter. It was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander who was closing things out for the Thunder, and he looked like the more veteran player. He looked like the rightful second highest vote for MVP. And for SGA, he might do it again tonight and put the Thunder up 2-0, similar to what we've seen from the Timberwolves, although they're at home. OKC could go to Dallas with a 2-0 advantage. I think this one goes to 7. I'll take OKC in a 7-game series. I love this one right here.
Meanwhile, no Porzingis, no problem for Boston. They beat Cleveland by 25 points in a beatdown in game one. And even if the Cavs come ready to play tonight, I don't think anybody really sees them going into Boston and winning on the road. In fact, they're going to have a hard time getting not getting swept in this series by the Celtics.
They are. I feel like the Celtics, it's just them right here. They could be without Jaylen Brown. They could probably even be without Jason Tatum, and they might even win this series. Just knowing that Derek White is playing great as of late. They've had a lot of guys, other guys step up off their bench. Even Sam Howell has proven that he can be somebody who's helpful off the bench with this team. So, yeah, the Celtics right now, they're rolling. I'm ready for Knicks Celtics.
I feel bad for Donovan Mitchell just because he doesn't have a huge supporting cast at all in Cleveland. He really doesn't. I mean, he's like a one-man show. And you know Donovan Mitchell's going to get his points, but you just don't have that second and third option who are ready to step up and rise to the occasion the way the Celtics do on their roster.
Yeah, Garland, Darius Garland is the guy who you'd probably look at as the secondary scorer for them, and he just hasn't been the guy the postseason, really, since the All-Star break. Evan Mobley, I love what he does defensively, but he doesn't give him enough offensively.
No, you're right. But he scored in game one. It didn't matter. 19 points, who cares? Because, again, you get blown out by 25. Want to bring this up too. Frank Vogel, relieved of his duties after one season with the Phoenix Suns. Did Frank Vogel deserve to get fired after that playoff exit by the Suns.
Unlike Darvin Ham, I thought Darvin Ham deserved to be fired from the Lakers. I'm just going to say it out right now. I feel like Vogel did not need to take the, you know, take the fall. Yeah, take the fall here. Yeah. I was really disappointed because I feel like this team, the way it was constructed, that's what you blame this on. You don't blame Frank Vogel for this team only having seven guys they can rotate in the playoffs. The fact that they built it all around and that payroll that they're having to spend on Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and Bradley Beal all together, it's a disaster over there. I wouldn't want to coach that team. It looks like Mike Budenholzer is going to coach that team, and he, of course, coached the Bucks to an NBA Finals two seasons ago. So let's see if that ends up working out.
I'm telling you, a lot of interesting storylines around the NBA. A lot of interesting storylines as we get going. Hey, by the way, minor fans, it's going to be a lot of fun today. We have one of the newest members of the UTEP men's basketball team. Actually, we have the newest member of the UTEP men's basketball team joining us on the phones today. In fact, Adrian, you asked earlier for listener submission questions. We've been getting them. Some of them we just can't ask. Like,
yeah.
I love the listener who said, can you please find out how much NIL it took to secure Barnes Services to come over from Tarleton to UTEP?
Yeah, he's never going to answer that one right there. But I appreciate people asking these questions. And I think we've got some great ones. Devin Barnes, Tarleton State transfer. He's a point guard. He'll remind you this throughout the interview. He is a point guard, has played the position point guard his entire life. Averaged 13 points a game last year for Tarleton State. This is a great addition for the Miners. I feel like you needed somebody on this upcoming roster who can score and who can shoot from the perimeter, and he could do both those things. I'm impressed with Devin Barnes, everything I see from him on film. And the interesting nugget is he has an El Paso tie. We'll dive into that in next hour.
I just checked on Twitter and X. It was Esau who asked, he had two questions. What role did Billy Gillespie have in his recruitment to UTEP? Which I thought was, I don't know. We'll find out what kind of an answer that one is, if any, any role. And then the what type of NIL deal did UTEP fork up? That's hilarious. Like a player is going to just in the middle of the interview say, oh, yeah, you know what? They gave me $50,000. That's what we need. We need players who come to UTEP to start admitting on their first interview how much NIL money it took to bring them here.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. But I love the effort right there by Hermosillo. I will also say, Steve, the interesting part about Billy Gillespie, you said that first. He was forced to step down due to medical reasons back in November. So he didn't finish out the season with Tarleton State like, most would assume. He did not finish out the season. So I'm sure that for Devin Barnes, he probably grew closer to the assistant coaches, knowing that, yeah, he just didn't get a lot of Billy Clyde here this year.
Nope, not this year. That's for sure. All right. First time out of the show. Good start to the program, by the way. You want in? 505-6009. You want to sign up to win the Mother's Day with us at the ballpark on Sunday? Please sign up now. Don't wait until it's too late via the 600 ESPN El Paso app. All right, Lane Frank will be joining us on tomorrow's program, but Charlie One is here now. He's got our first traffic update of the afternoon. Sports Talk as we continue. 505-6009. Our friends at X-1. Return of the Night Mouse, the name of this track. We appreciate the opportunity to play some local music, some great local music for you on the show. You want to weigh into the program? Now's the time to do it. 505-6009, our telephone number, gets you right on in and through to Sports Talk. That's 505-6009 as we continue here on the show. And by the way, if you're wondering where's Alberto today, Good question. How about the fact that he is in Crucis and he's going to have updates for us on the show involving UTEP softball after their remarkable win last night where they scored 7 unanswered to stun Jacksonville State and advance.
Yeah, I mean, first off, shout out to Alberto Retta for being out there for us for this one. This is going to be an excellent, weekend for UTEP softball. Just an excellent opportunity. I think that's the best way to describe this because for them to rally back the way that they did yesterday, I mean, what an emotional roller coaster of a game. We talked about the Jacksonville State team holding on to a significant lead. I think it was 2-0 by the time we went off air yesterday. Well, the UTEP softball team rallied back yesterday. They won 7-6 in this one. It was just so remarkable right there. And for the Miners to stage this kind of a comeback, I think it really started, you could really say this, it started by the home run by Sample. There was an Allen RBI single that really helped them out as well. This was all in, I believe this was the it's looking like the sixth inning. Yeah, the end of the sixth inning yesterday, Steve. So Jacksonville State was up as much as 6-0 yesterday against UTEP. UTEP ends up rallying back and they win 7-6. What a game. How emotional. And to keep their season on the line down 6-0 in the sixth inning and to rally back like that, what a comeback.
Nothing short of phenomenal when you really talk about what UTEP was able to do. So their reward is the fact that they are still alive and they get a chance to play here today in the next round in Las Cruces, who is hosting the CUSA softball team. So, yeah, we're excited. In fact, 5 o'clock, things get going here tonight against Liberty. Now, Liberty, they're an interesting team in the sense that UTEP recently played Liberty. And I think they lost the first 2, but they won on Sunday. So they had the opportunity, and, I mean, they're beatable. You never know. If UTEP can get their bats going, anything is possible. Anything is possible.
Yeah, and you know, you also talk about postseason runs, just period. This could be something special right here for this squad. And I think you talk about all the emotions that this team has gone through, both on and off the field. It's just a really cool way for them to rally back. They dropped that first game yesterday. Remember, double elimination. They dropped the first game to La Tech, and then they rally back in the second game against Jacksonville State. Pretty special.
All right, so again, Alberto will join us in our 5 o'clock hour. We're excited about that. Also, having Devin Barnes on the program at 5:20 is going to be terrific. Hags at 6:15. And then Chihuahua's baseball coming up at 6:30. All that happening here. 600 ESPN El Paso. And all you have to do to be a part of it is to give us a ring or chime in on our 600 ESPN El Paso app. A lot of ways to get right on through. Or Twitter and X as we continue here on the show. Meanwhile, some of the other things we have not yet had a chance to talk about that are making headlines today. Locally, I'm still going to be interested to see. I mean, we touched on this a few days ago, okay, since Devin Barnes is coming on. Wondering what UTEP is going to do to replace Jeremy Cox with their assistant coaching position. Remember, they have Earl Boykins. They have Brian Spriggs. Okay. Now, Spriggs was on the original staff, but he was promoted after the first couple seasons when Butch Pierre took another job. So Spriggs replaced Pierre after 2 seasons. Boykins has been with this staff since Joe first arrived in El Paso, as well as Jeremy Cox. So you think about, you know, what Jeremy Cox meant to the UTEP men's basketball program. Coached the bigs, specialized in JUCO recruiting. And if you're UTEP, you know that you need an X's and O's coach as well as somebody who can really recruit. You want someone who can check both boxes off. Now, I will say this. Of all the recruiters they had, Spriggs has probably landed them the most players, I would say. But you know, in the JUCO world, Jeremy Cox is so well tied in. So the thing is, with his successor, Do you look for an X's and O's guy who also is very JUCO-oriented, just like Jeremy Cox? Or do you want an X's and O's guy who's just a great recruiter in general, not necessarily JUCO, but just somebody that can go get you players?
I'd probably go X's and O's and somebody who also knows the defense. I mean, the fact that Jeremy Cox was the one who implemented all the defensive schemes for the Miners, that was so crucial. It's hard to find somebody who does both, where they're recruiting and coaching, and you know they're very involved in the X's and O's, very involved in bench situations. There'd be many times where Jeremy Cox would be dialing up or drawing up plays or drawing up defensive schemes in the timeout. So they're going to lose that right there. They need somebody like that, which brings me to my next point, and that is, where would Joe Golden go with this? He's shown us in the past when Butch Pierre left UTEP, he promoted from within with Brian Spriggs. There's not really anybody on the current coaching staff, supporting staff members, who could necessarily be promoted to the bench. So he has to go outside, and he probably goes with somebody he trusts, knowing the pattern and what and the history of, you know, his head coach or his assistant coaching hires. He likes loyalty. He likes trust.
Yeah, you're right, which makes it interesting when you start to think about who could be out there with connections to him over the years that he would trust to bring in here and give him a chance to be his top assistant.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I think that, you know, you really have to evaluate this one. I wrote this earlier this week, and I'll say it again. I wouldn't be surprised if this drags on a little while and this takes some time for him to really fully vet the right assistant for this program and then bring that person in.
I think that's fair. All right, as we approach the bottom of the hour, let's go next to Drew, who joins us on the show. 505-6009, our telephone number. What's going on, Drew? How are you?
How you doing, sir? Good. You?
Doing all right, man. How are you?
Good. I want to wish all the mothers out there a happy Mother's Day coming up.
There you go.
And
good
I wanna
good
wish
job.
You a happy birthday next Thursday, right?
How did you remember that? What? How
I
did you know?
I remember my buddy's birthday, you and Adrian.
Appreciate that.
I got them circled on my little calendar here.
Thank you.
Yeah,
yes.
Let's talk some NBA.
All right.
They're letting go of Vogel and they let go of Ham. I think the general manager should bear some of this blame. He makes those rosters, and some of the players, they don't play up to their potential. So don't you think the general manager should take some of the blame?
100%. But I always feel like in sports, the GM sometimes gets a much longer lifeline than the coaches do.
Yeah, they always do. Yeah, I agree. And as far as your Knicks go, good for your team, Steve, but Thibodeau, I think he plays them too hard. Like they practice too hard and everything, from what I hear. And that's why they come up injured.
Well, and then I don't know if you heard about this or not, but OG Anunoby's already been ruled out for game three with that hamstring injury. So Anunoby will be out. Tough break for the Knicks. And you wonder who's going to now get into that rotation and kind of fill the void, because you already lost Mitchell Robinson. He's out as well for the rest of this series. So, look, he does. He plays a short rotation. Like, Josh Hart plays every minute of every game. I mean, and you got to think that sometime you're going to wear your guys out. It's going to happen where they're just going to run out of gas. So, you know, it might not happen in this series, but it probably will happen in the next series, assuming they play Boston.
I've got the NBA lottery is Sunday also. I'm hoping Grizzlies get good hide. The luck goes with the Grizzlies.
Well,
and here's a hypothetical question for you.
Yes.
Canelo versus Oscar De La Hoya, who would you take in their prime?
In their prime?
Yeah.
Canelo. I saw Oscar lose in his prime to a lot of great fighters, okay? I saw Oscar, you know, he was in some wars, in wars with guys like Shane Mosley, Floyd Mayweather Jr. He was also, you know, he had some other big ones too. But I mean, yeah, I feel like Canelo in his prime versus Oscar in his prime. I think it'd be a fun fight. I think it would be entertaining. I don't think Oscar would go right at him, but I think Canelo is just too big and strong for him. What about you?
Well, some of my boxing friends, they think the opposite. They think De La Hoya was faster and had better footwork and Oh, that's their opinion.
Well,
yeah,
let me say this too.
I kind of go with Oscar. Yeah.
When Canelo fought Mayweather, Canelo wasn't in his prime yet. He was up and coming, but he hadn't yet really reached the pinnacle. That's a great question. Who would win in the prime of their careers? You know, I'll text that one to Matt Aguilar, who's my boxing guru. We talk a lot about that, and I'll see what Matt would say.
All right, then. Steve, happy birthday coming up, man.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks for the call,
yes,
Drew.
Yes, sir.
Take care. 32 pass. Let's go to Adrian right now. Bottom of the hour Sports Center update. Thank you very much. As far as the draft lottery goes, this is interesting. The Pistons have a 14% chance of getting the number one overall pick, a 40% chance getting a top three pick. The Wizards come in also with that same exact 14%, 40% ratio. Then it drops a little bit. The Charlotte Hornets, a 13.3% chance to get the first overall pick and a 38.6% chance to get the top three picks. Then the Blazers at 12.5% and 36.6%. The Spurs at 10.5% and 31.6%. The Raptors at 9% and 27.6%. And then Memphis Drew's Grizzlies, a 7.5% chance to get the first overall pick and a 23.4% chance to fall into the top three. After that, it's Utah, the Rockets, the Hawks, the Bulls, the Rockets again. And by the way, as far as the second Rockets pick, if they don't finish in the top four, the pick goes to Oklahoma City and then the Sacramento Kings with a 1% chance to win the lottery and a 3% chance to fall into the top three. And the team with the worst odds, the Golden State Warriors, a 0.5% chance to win the number one overall pick, 1.7% to be in the top three. If they do not land in the top four, that pick will go to Portland. So that is how the first round with the lottery picks will end up if things don't change. So it'll be interesting to see what ends up happening. And by the way, Oklahoma City is also kind of interesting. If the Jazz are now eighth, but if they fall out of the top 10, then OKC gets the pick. So that's how the eighth pick would work, and that's pretty much our lottery situation. And by the way, if the Raptors fall out of the top six, then their pick goes to San Antonio. So that is also something interesting to keep an eye on. You know, the Spurs are five, and the Raptors are six. But can you imagine if the Raptors fall back to seven or eight, San Antonio would get that pick and then potentially could even move up from the fifth pick if that one gets some lottery luck.
Yeah, I would say that the team right here who could benefit the most from a top three pick would be the San Antonio Spurs.
Yep.
Because they're just one or two pieces away from actually being a legit contender to make it in the playoffs. I feel like the Grizzlies, I've got to see it again. I got to see them run it back healthy with everybody back. And maybe healthy is too much to ask from this team. Durability has been really the only issue that you've seen from the Grizzlies, except for the off the court issues that we saw last year from John Morant. So I would say number one San Antonio, maybe number two Memphis, since they were just a playoff team last year. Number three, the team that could benefit as much from this one right here, I would say the Utah Jazz. They were not far away from being a contender this year with some of their young pieces, as crazy as that sounds. They have a young nucleus, but I think they're building things right. And of course, it's an interesting organization, front office I should say, by Danny Ainge. It's ran through him. So Pistons, Wizards, Trailblazers, Hornets, those teams are a lot, you know, they're, what, 3 or 4 years away from actually being a contender.
Now, Utah finished 31-51 this year, and, you know, that put them in that spot where they're at right now. And you're right, it was a full rebuild for Danny Ainge. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you look at his team, he's got Lauri Markkanen, Colin Sexton, Jordan Clarkson, John Collins, a lot of vets on that team, a lot of vets. I mean, guys that either have expiring contracts or pieces that he could maneuver. he needs some young guns and needs some bodies that can come in and help.
Yeah, and I think the program guys are going to be like Lauri Markkanen and Jordan Clarkson. Those guys are going to be the ones that you kind of build the young guys around. I love Walker Kessler. I love Keontae George. Those are the young pieces of that Utah Jazz team right there. They can grow with them moving forward. So they're a team. You know, Donovan Klingon is out there from UConn. Maybe they go after him. He's a really interesting prospect. The other prospects who are top the draft, by the way, a weak draft, I'll just say it there. The other ones are all foreign players. France has two representatives who could go 1 and 2, respectively. There's an Australian baller right now who a lot of people like as well. Nikola Topic is a guy from Serbia that people like. Alex Saar is the guy I was talking about from France. And then you talk about a little bit of a dip in production. So let's see what happens.
Do you hear about Kenny Lofton's season he had this year? This is interesting. Kenneth Lofton Jr. began the season. We all remember Kenneth Lofton. He was the big kid from Louisiana Tech who was drafted a few years ago. Started the year in Memphis. Plays 15 games. Barely gets off the bench. Averages 6 points, 6 minutes a game and scores 2.6 points. All right. Then he goes to Philadelphia. Plays two games for the Sixers. Again, seldom used. 4.5 minutes. Scores 1 point a game. Then goes to Utah. Plays 4 games for the Jazz, but averages 23 minutes a game, unlike the other stops, and scoring 13.8 points per game. So all of a sudden, you look at the small role he had in those 4 games with Utah, realize he's only 21 years of age, and you say to yourself, huh, you wonder, did Danny Ainge stumble on something here with a guy that tormented Conference USA for a couple of years, and maybe Kenneth Lofton Jr. might have found himself a spot with the Utah Jazz?
Yeah, I really like the first off, the trade that initially happened with the Grizzlies to the 76ers, that was like, hey, let's throw in Kenneth Lofton Jr. in this, and he was kind of one of those nice chips the 76ers had. However, Philly misused him almost immediately when they got him. They kind of bounced between G League and the NBA, and then they just kind of threw him in as like a trade-in chip package over to Utah, and that's how the Jazz, they may have even released him. I may be wrong on that one. Philly may have even went as far as releasing Kenneth Lofton Jr., and then Utah, you're right, Danny Ainge stumbling into something. I'll say this, the other guy who shined out of that same era of Conference USA was Bryson Williams this year, healthy season. He played all 33 games for the Ontario Clippers this past year and averaged in double figures, 10 points a game, 6 rebounds, so maybe he finds his way up to the NBA eventually.
I hope so, because hasn't Bryson now spent about the last 2-3 seasons in the G League?
Correct. This is his second season in the G League. Last year was injury riddled. He only played 20 of the games, and this year played all 33. So okay. Healthy season for him.
Good to hear. YYS just got in and said, watch the Spurs get the number one pick again.
Possibly.
It's possible. It is. It's possible. That would be interesting. I know Spurs fans would love that. All right. As we continue here on Sports Talk, more coming up in a moment, including a chance to go watch a couple of powerhouses in the Sun Bowl. But I'm not talking about the Sun Bowl game in December, and I'm not talking about a UTEP football non-conference game. We'll explain next. The Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso. Barnes, some good questions that have been submitted, by the way, on 600 ESPN El Paso and our free mobile app. This coming from Joe Rod. I didn't even realize this, but apparently tickets are now on sale for the big matchup between FC Juarez and Club America at the Sun Bowl. The matchup is set for June 23rd, and Adrian, this friendly is going to be a good one. And I know this, FC Juarez has their fan base in both cities. Club America has a huge fan base in this city, and that Sun Bowl is liable to be packed. Sadly, more America fans than FC Juarez fans, but that's just because of how large that fan base is.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to a soccer fan, you know, me not being the soccer guy, but I really appreciate the sport, love the sport, and I think I recognize how historic this matchup is. I was talking to somebody about this. They were like, you know what? I root against Club America, and I'm not necessarily an FC Juarez fan, but I want to be among the first to buy a ticket for this one. This is what a fan was telling me, and I was, you know, asking a little bit more, and he said, you know, my son and I, we grew up in the sport. We love soccer. We love whenever we get a chance to watch live soccer. It's one thing watching these clubs on TV, but to see them in person, especially when they're in your own backyard, it's like, I mean, it's really historic. I think that's the best way to describe it. So for these two clubs to play at the Sun Bowl, I mean, what an awesome, awesome thing for our local soccer fans.
So let me say this. I am looking right now at the press box side, just to give you an idea of how much tickets are for this, okay? And trust me when I tell you, on the 50-yard line, which is Section 5, the tickets are nearly completely sold out. Like, completely sold out. And what they've done is they've divided it into, like, a million sections. I mean, it's wild what they've done. So, you know, they have all these different sections, but let me say this, okay? In section 6 in the lower bowl, those are $90 tickets. $90 tickets, okay? And then they also have section 4 and 5. Those are all $90. And then section 7, they go down to $65, okay? So that's how they're going to be working on the press box side. Let me look and see if the other side is the same. Yes. So sections 20... I think it's 23, 24, and no, I'm sorry. 23, 22, and 21. Those are all $90. And then sections 24 and 20 are $65. So when you go sit where the end zone is, which is right behind the goal, those seats are $40. But when you sit in the, what row is this? Let's take a look how this is priced. Okay, anything that's row 30 or farther back, the price goes from $40 to $20. So I like that. Now, it's kind of the same thing when you're talking about the higher end seats, but I've noticed something, okay? I think they cut off the tickets, Adrian, in the lower bowl after row, it looks like, 29. So I think what they've done is they're selling like all the 30 and below is the plan of how they're selling these tickets.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I'm looking at it right now. It's very standard. If you go to any kind of Sun Bowl events, if you're used to paying a lower price for being in the end zone, then yeah, you're good over there. But if you want to get a better view, then you'll go at either the press box side or opposite of it and pay a little bit more. My question to you is, do you think they're going to do like luxury or those box tickets, like the blue seats? You know, are they going to do anything with those or even the upstairs club seats for at the Sun Bowl?
They must have club seating for this. They have to. The only question is, how do fans get it? Because on Ticketmaster, you can't buy it. Like, you can't buy the GCU Terrace. You can't buy the suites. The best seats in the house are $110. And that's to sit in, like, the first five rows of sections 4, 5, and 6. Those are the best seats in the house. So they're not selling the blue seats right now.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's all grayed out. So I forgot how this even works. Like, does UTEP control this part of it, or is this also part of FC Juarez and Club America? I'm not sure.
I don't know either. I don't know who's promoting this, but it is pretty cool that they're doing this on a Sunday, June 23rd, out at Sun Bowl Stadium. All right, 1 hour down, 90 minutes to go. Stay with us. Sports Talk continues right here, 600 ESPN.
Sports Studio. Here's Steve Kaplowitz and Adrian Broaddus.
All right, start of hour number two here on Sports Talk. Welcome back, everybody. I am fascinated with this story that has nothing to do with UTEP, but it's a fascinating college sports story. We'll talk about that. Devin Barnes is going to join us here in less than 20 minutes. We'll meet the newest minor who, I guess, announced about a week ago that he picked UTEP former Tarleton State player, played for Billy Gillespie, and also visited East Carolina, among others, but chose the minors. And according to our calculations, Adrian, I believe Joe Golding has one spot left, at least as of now. Nobody else is left, but currently the way it stands, one spot remaining for his roster to fill up for the upcoming season.
He's shown in the past that this one scholarship, the one left one, he is very patient with this last scholarship. Last year, they had an opportunity to maybe add some players during the transfer portal process, during the offseason. Instead, they chose to go with Babacar Mbengue, a 7-footer that they already committed at that time when they wanted him, that they committed to developing him through the system. He redshirted that year. And the previous offseason, which is really the only other offseason you can refer to, he brought in Alfred Hollins, which I actually liked as a late acquisition for UTEP, and he ended up starting a lot of games for the minors. So I feel like with that last scholarship, you can go a lot of different ways. You can get somebody that you build on, but I feel like that's what they already have in KJ Thomas. So I hope that UTEP basketball goes with an immediate impact guy for this final scholarship. I think it's easier said than done.
Now, again, according to NCAA rules, a team can have up to 13 scholarship players. And as we know, UTEP right now has 12. Listen to what John Calipari is looking to do at Arkansas, okay? This is fascinating to me. Here's his quote. "You may think I'm crazy, but I told my staff I only want to have 8 or 9 guys. They're leaving anyway, and why would I develop a kid for someone else? Why would I do that?" Now, Cal said he's talked to other coaches who have discussed similar strategies. This has never happened before, ever. Here is something else he said he wants to do with his team, okay? He wants to use the other spots on his roster for walk-ons and rely on those non-scholarship players and grad assistants to help the team prepare for its opponents next season. He noted women's college basketball teams often use non-staffers to help them in practice. Here is Cal's quote. "I want those grad assistants to have played in Europe or just got done playing and could still play," he said. "We can use them in practice. The women's programs have 5 guys they call managers, but that's who they're scrimmaging against. Maybe I'd do it that way. We have some walk-ons. We have some grad assistants. We have 8 or 9 guys on scholarship, and that's it. And if there's a 10th guy, he knows he's the 10th guy." Now, Calipari said his staff cautioned that an injury could create challenges with a shortened roster. But Cal said he's comfortable with the concept because he's played small rotations in the past. In fact, he said when he was at UMass, he coached 6 players. So this is interesting to me. This really is. Because I do agree with the theory, why develop somebody who's just going to leave you and go someplace else? Plus, if you've got a roster of 8 to 9 guys and you know that that's your rotation, think about everybody that comes knows they're playing. They know they're going to get in games and they're going to be a big part of it. I wonder if this could be something we start to see more and more in college basketball. Because understand this, if UTEP tried doing that, let's just say UTEP had 10 guys and 2 guys get hurt and they're down 8, it's going to be a little more challenging for Joe Golding. But if you're Arkansas and you're Cal and you realize that you're going to have 8 or 9 McDonald's All-Americans and 8 or 9 guys that are the most highly regarded players in college basketball, even if you have an injury or two and you're down to 7, you could probably get away with playing a 7-man rotation as long as the caliber of guys are that high. But I do find it fascinating to me that this could be a new trend we see in college basketball. Some coaches deciding, I'm not going to give 13 scholarships out. I'll give out 8 or 9, and that's all we need because we're tired of losing players every season who feel like either they're not getting enough minutes or they're getting more money or something else, so they're going to go someplace else.
Yeah, if you talk about Cal in this case right here, the five-star prospects out of high school are the guys he always seems to get. He's always going to get those guys right there. But it's the fringe guys who are maybe four-star prospects out of high school who you don't necessarily know if they're going to make it to the NBA right away. I think that's who he's really speaking about right there. And I think this is an issue that the power conferences have. The teams or organizations who have a lot of money that they could tap into for NIL resources, because if you got eight solid guys, well, that's probably a lot better. You have much less chefs in the kitchen that, you know, you might have problems, you might have off the court issues, you might have even issues where the guys are wondering, why am I not playing?
Yeah.
So this is a good opportunity to shorten your rotations. I get the injury concern, but that's why you have the three or four other scholarship players in that case.
Unfortunately, UTEP can't put that model together.
No, never. Never.
No.
Never.
Because they'll never have the quality from 1 to 9 to ever do that. It's just, that's just facts. It's reality. I mean, you know, last year, heck, Joe Golding was getting walk-ons to start playing during the season. And, you know, he was tinkering with his roster all the time. But UTEP is not like Arkansas. They're not like Cal. They're not going to be able to just say, we want 8 or 9 scholarship players, and we'll just eat the other 4. But you know what? For the purpose of the discussion with high majors, which is really what this is all about, it's all about high majors. I can absolutely see a lot of big-time programs following suit and doing this and not putting a roster of 13 together and instead going 8 to 10.
So Joe Golding, throughout his time, he's had like a 10-man rotation at UTEP. Rodney Terry, his last year, the pandemic shortened season, they only played 24 games that year. He had an 8-man rotation, and he stuck with that. And most of the games, it really stick to 7 guys. The 8th man was Christian Scholin, if you can remember that name. But regardless, they stuck with 8 guys that year. And look at where they finished, 12-12. It was tough to really tax on a lot of minutes to those guys.
Well, again, that's also because the quality at the top is not good enough to, you know, finish first in the league every year. Look, if you were getting the cream of the crop and you had guys on the bench that could be starting everywhere else around the country, it's a completely different argument. But that's not the case here. Like right now, going into 23-24, we can almost, if you had to ask who's going to get the bulk of the minutes this upcoming season for UTEP basketball, and you had to pick 7 or 8 guys, even 9 guys, you probably have a pretty good idea already who those guys are going to be, assuming they're healthy.
You do, unless you're going to talk about a massive jump by certain players who are kind of at the end of the bench. Yeah, you kind of know 8, 9 guys for this team. And maybe they like to have like more of a 9, 10-man rotation, similar to what Chris Jans did at New Mexico State. He liked to go deep into his bench. He liked to have that versatility. He didn't like to be top-heavy with his players, and he liked to spread you know, the love on the team. It's interesting. I think it's coach-to-coach. It's different philosophies that definitely go into play. And, yeah, it's different styles that you might see from these different coaches.
One thing I will say, though, about Joe Golding, he's not afraid to change the lineup, because there are times we see completely different lineups in there, and we see guys playing all of a sudden that just weren't even there the game before or games before. So, you know, we talked about it earlier. Even if you're a walk-on, if you practice better than scholarship players, there's a pretty good chance you're going to see the bulk of the minutes that following game.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. I mean, and then you can earn more playing time in that case as well. So, yeah, I feel like it's interesting. I don't ever see UTEP going into a model like this for, you know, even like Texas. They had way too many players this past year with Rodney Terry, I felt like they just would go into their bench and just didn't really have an identity. If they went 8, 9 guys and you really got to see their best players get out there, you could get a true understanding of what kind of team they are.
I almost feel like 10 is the perfect model for the high majors, because if you have 10 great players top to bottom, you have to assume you're probably going to lose 1 or 2 players to injury every year. Usually you might not lose more than that unless you really get hit by the injury bug. So let's just say you even lose 3 of your 10 to injuries. then you still have your seven-man rotation to play. So I feel like that's still good enough, but, you know, that's, again, talking about the best of the best when you realize that you're dealing with 10 guys that can play not just at your school but anywhere else around the country.
Yeah, I think the 10-man rotate or a 10-guy lineup for these higher major teams, that's probably the way to go.
Okay, our telephone number, 505-6009. Get you right in through to Sports Talk, 505-6009. And we do have lines ringing in here into hour two of the program. Let me go to Mike. He joins us next. And Mike's going to weigh in on the discussion. Mike, your thoughts on what John Calipari wants to do at Arkansas, perhaps going to just 8 or 9 scholarship players instead of 13?
You know, what's the difference between 8 and 13 if you got All-Americans across the board? They're all, only 5 can play. The rest are going to transfer out. The problem with 8 is how are you going to practice?
Oh, he already said it. He'll want to have grad assistants that have European experience that could still play at a high level. He mentioned that, and he also mentioned walk-ons that would fill out the rest of the roster and do it that way. So he'd practice with walk-ons and higher caliber grad assistants.
So you pay the grad assistants from Europe. The walk-ons, probably not. Maybe a little NIL money. And you can put them in practice with all your All-Americans, your 8 All-Americans.
That's right.
McDonald's All-Americans. And they're going to – it's not going to work.
You don't think
– with 13 All-Americans. He's not going to win with 8.
Yeah, that's the question.
You have to have the right balance.
Well, what he said
–
Yep.
To form a program and have a couple of seniors, juniors that go the whole way, along with a couple of freshman All-Stars. And you're right. There's one basketball, 5 players, that's it. Some are going to leave, some are going to go. But his model didn't work at Kentucky, and it's not going to work.
What's the perfect number in your mind of scholarship players on a roster for teams like that? How many would you have?
I still think you got to practice 5-on-5, so you're looking at 12.
Okay.
12. And you're going to lose some. I get it.
Yep.
But you got to have 5-on-5 in practice. I mean, I that's the last time I played ball. You practice 5-on-5.
Yep, I hear you. Appreciate you, Mike. Thanks for the call. Let me say hello to Cruz. He's joining us next as we continue 16 past the hour on Sports Talk. Go ahead, Cruz.
Hey, but no, I was thinking, if you're not going to have that many players, you're going to get in trouble with foul problems there towards the end of the game, especially in tournaments, say your conference tournament or the NCAA tournament. And you're going to have to be playing with players that are injured a little more than usual and players that are tired. And then if there's some kind of a violation and somebody's disqualified for the season or a few games because of a fight and stuff like that, you know, so you can run into problems.
So what's your perfect number of scholarship athletes? You could have a max of 13. If you were doing this the right way, how many would you go with?
I would still go with 13. You don't,
just don't know.
You get to pick them. You get to pick and choose. So you kind of customize it according to how you want them. But I would still stay with about 12 or 13 because, like this other gentleman was saying, you need to go 5-on-5 in practice.
Yeah.
And you got to be ready for the unexpected.
I hear you. I think the problem right now is Cal just feels like he's developing players all season, and then they leave him, and he's tired of it. And he only wants guys that can just be in with him for the long haul. All right, very quickly, Enrique, you'll be our final caller. Then we got to get to break and come back with new minor Devin Barnes. Go ahead, Enrique.
I'm going to make this quick. I think it's a great idea. 8, 9, because this whole quote, I'm not going to train people if they don't want to stay there, it's a great mentality because those kids that stay or if they leave, if they're not going to get coached by these coaches because they're moving around, they are totally relying on their ability. The fact that they're not going to get coached or moved with these coaches, they're having to rely completely on themselves, and they have to really just bank on themselves. So I think it's a great idea. It's going to force these kids to like, hey, I'm going to have to invest into this school instead of having to bounce around and I'll take it off the line.
Good point. All right, Enrique. I'm with you on that one. That's probably what Cal and other coaches are thinking, too. Very good. We'll come back, and we'll do a little UTEP with Devin Barnes next. But first, let's go to Charlie 1 and get traffic. 21 past the hour. We continue here on Sports Talk. Well, there's a new minor in town, and he's going to be a big part of the 2023, 2024-2025 season. I'm already off a year. And he is a guard, Devin Barnes. And he joins us live on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline as we continue here on Sports Talk. First off, Devin, welcome to the program. Great to have you on. And welcome to UTEP. You are the newest minor. And when we first found out that you were choosing El Paso and UTEP, you got a lot of people around here pretty fired up.
Yes, sir. I'm glad to be a part of the program, you know. I'm glad to be a part of it. I think it's been like a dream since, you know, I lived in El Paso when I was younger. So, you know, it's been a dream to do this, come back home and do that.
All right. So let's start off first with the fact that you lived in El Paso when you were younger. Tell me around what years you were here in El Paso and what you remember about being in El Paso.
So my dad was in the Army, so we stayed on Fort Bliss, and I think we moved around when I was like four. We stayed there about 6 years, so that was probably we moved to 2013, so like 2008, something like that. We got there, and you know, so I went to Huey Elementary School over there by Ross, over there by the base. I played for Coach Fred Reynolds for like a city league, El Paso Lightning. And, you know, I remember a lot down there in El Paso. You know, so my cousin used to play for Memphis, and he was down. He played UTEP in the championship, Conference USA Championship, and I was at the game. That's like 2011.
Now, listen, you bring it up memories that are still difficult for a lot of El Pasoans that were at that game, Devin. I remember that game very well because, if you know, when you were probably there watching it as a youngster, Miners had a 12-point lead with 6 minutes left, thought they were going to be punching their ticket into the NCAA tournament, but some guy named Will Barton and the rest of Memphis decided they could find a way to come back and win this game, and that's exactly what ended up happening.
Right, yeah, exactly. It was a crazy experience. I just remember the atmosphere just being, like, unbelievable. Like, the gym was packed. It was filled out. It was just so loud in there. You know, like you said, guys were about 12, and I remember just, like, a little kid. I was so emotional, my dad to tell me to calm down. Like, it's all right. Like, it's going to be okay. So, like, yeah, I remember that, too.
What was it like to watch your cousin, Will Barton? He's an NBA vet playing that game and such a huge one.
So when I was younger, that I was just getting into basketball because I played football before basketball, and I was just getting into basketball. So, like, watching those games, like, it kind of, like, inspired me to play, like, wanted to play. And, like, sitting there watching, like, my cousin, this is my family playing, you know what I mean, and doing these things on a big stage, just it kind of made me feel like, obviously, I want to do it too, but I know I can do it. You know what I mean? Because he was in my position one day watching players play. And so it just kind of inspired me. Like, I think that's the best way I can tell how it made me feel.
So that makes me understand that when you came to the game, you were obviously rooting for family. You were rooting for Will in Memphis. Had the Miners won that game, would you have been devastated, or would you have been okay since you were living in living in El Paso at the time?
No, I would have been devastated for sure. But, you know, because actually I went to Memphis, played them like 2 weeks before that at UTEP, and UTEP had beat them by like 20. I just remember how like mad I was. So I would definitely be devastated.
Devin, when you talk about just the fact that you're coming here to El Paso, do you feel like it's a full circle moment for you now, reflecting back almost, you know, more than a decade ago, that when you were out here in West Texas, now you're going to be pretty much, you know, coming back here for college basketball here, West Texas, El Paso, for your next journey?
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, when we figured out how to enter the portal and UTEP was in the loop, you know what I mean? That's the first thing that popped into me and my family's heads was that, like, it's a full circle. You know what I mean? I believe God works in mysterious ways, and it's just crazy. You know what I mean? Like, you never know where you're going to end up at. And then to end up here in El Paso is just like, you know what I mean? It's definitely a full circle. I was just there, like you said, a decade ago, you know, watching UTEP play. I was there playing basketball down there, and I'm coming back to do the same thing. I'm going to play at UTEP. I'm going to play basketball in El Paso, so it's definitely a full circle.
Have you reached out to Fred Reynolds yet and let him know that you're coming back since you played on his team as a kid?
Right, yeah. So, actually, my visit, I seen him. And that was great to see him. You know what I mean? It was Like, he taught me so much things, and I was able to tell him when I did commit that I'm coming, you know, I'm coming back. You know what I mean? Obviously, he welcomed me full arms, like open arms, and just he's really excited. So,
no, I think a lot of El Pasoans are going to be excited to see you, and more than anything else, also excited with the fact that, you know, we look at your journey. And it started last year at Tarleton as a sophomore. You averaged 13 points a game. It was a good basketball team. And there's a connection as well because at least at the start of the season, before he had to leave the team, Billy Gillespie was coaching you at Tarleton. And we all know Billy because he spent a couple of seasons here in El Paso. It kind of launched his coaching career because he was an assistant before UTEP. That led him to Texas A&M and then eventually Kentucky and now over at Tarleton. So a lot of connections, even going back to the Billy Clyde days.
Right, yeah. He let me know that he used to coach up there. I've been told a couple of stories that, you know, he did, like, turn a program around. So it's, like you said, it's a lot of connections, and I think that's a great connection to have right there as a coach that was able to step in and help the program, you know, grow. So that's, I think that's a great connection.
So one of the questions we had on Twitter and X from Issa Hedemasio was he wanted to know, what role, if any, Billy Gillespie had in your recruitment to UTEP. So you just touched on it right now and mentioned the UTEP tie, but when you were looking at UTEP after going in the portal, did Coach Gillespie talk to you at all about that, or did you pretty much decide on your own that you wanted to go to UTEP?
I pretty much decided on my own. I really didn't, you know, let him know where I was thinking about going. Like, I did let him know I took a visit, things of that nature, but I kind of decided on my own, you know. But he told me, coach, obviously, that El Paso is a nice city, that he had fun when he was down here. But, like, at the end of the day, I think I just made the decision on my own.
Devin, you closed out the season real strong. Despite everything that was going on, you know, off the court with the coaching staff and everything, and you know, for our listeners out there who didn't know, it was medical reasons. Billy Gillespie stepped away from the team. How'd you guys try to stay intact, stay together, and still put forth a pretty good season with Tarleton State?
So I think it's kind of like sometimes, like, some coaches kind of connect with the players differently. And with Coach Jones, he was there with us all the time, like off the court. You know, he ran our study hall. You know, he would come to the dorms and just hang out with us when Coach Gillespie was the head. So, like, we were just kind of close to him. And so when he became the head coach, it was just kind of easy to understand, all right, we're going to come together and win for him. You know, and I think that just played a big part. His heart, his mindset of, these are my guys, these are my boys, I'm going to take care of them. It reflected, like, we've seen that, and we want to do the same thing, so we're going to take care of him, make sure he wins, and has a great experience doing this.
We're talking right now with Devin Barnes of the UTEP Miners live on our 600 ESPN El Paso Longhorn Distributing Hotline as we continue. So you grow up in Georgia. You play at Shiloh High School in Snellville, Georgia. Then you go to Triton College, and that gives you your first opportunity to really develop at the college level, playing there at Triton. You score 15 a game, 3.5 assists, 2.7 rebounds. You shoot well as well from three-point range, 41%. I'm curious, with the season you had, was there a lot of schools trying to recruit you out of Triton College?
It was a decent amount. The thing was with Triton was, like you said, I shot the bar real well, so I kind of moved to the two, and you know that really was my natural like position. But at the end of the day, I'm willing to win. I'm willing to help my team win. So like that was the best thing for it. We had a player that can pass the ball and I can shoot, so this kind of made the most sense to move kind of to the two. And so the schools that were recruiting me were like, you know what I mean, we love it, but we don't. You know, I'm just kind of too small to play two in some conferences. And that's the truth. But, you know, it definitely was some schools contacting me. And, yeah, that's...
Now, as far as Tarleton goes, did you play more of the one, or were you more of a shooting guard last season?
No, I was definitely the one. You know, I bring the ball up 95% of the game. The only time I didn't bring it up, we had another guard, Adam Musa, and he was able to, you know, distribute. And that's just... See, I think that's the good thing about my game is that I'm able to play the one. I know how to know when I have to what I have to do at the one. You know, when to score, when to pass. But when it comes to, you know what I'm saying, sometimes in situations you got to move. You got to move your spots. And I was able to move and still do what I had to do, you know. But I definitely played mostly the one.
Hey, you were tied for third most on the team with 45 steals. I think that will excite a lot of Miner fans, knowing that this team prides itself on its defense, Devin. You also were somebody on this team where every time I looked at pictures of you, I would see you like diving for loose balls or, you know, going out for a steal or something like that, which I think people will really like here in El Paso.
Right, yeah, of course. I think that's a game that's kind of like – the part of the game that's kind of like not cool, you know. I was installed that by Coach Fred Reynolds when I was younger. You know, defense was everything to him. And so I was – like, he made me fall in love with defense. And then once I got to Charleston, it was kind of the same thing. But, you know, Coach Gillespie, you got to make sure you dive on the floor. You got to get all the loose balls. That's going to win the game. It's not going to show up in the stat sheet, but that's going to win the game. So, you know, I really pride myself in that type of stuff. Because diving a ball – you think about it, most people don't want to dive on a ball. So, like, if you dive on a ball, you get it. That's a 50-50 possession right there. I could have – That can help you late in the game. So, you know, I really pride myself in that type of stuff. Obviously, defense creates easy offense, getting steals, creating fast break points. So, you know, that's something that I like to key in on right there.
Another question coming in on Twitter and X. This one's from Steven. He wants to know, what about UTEP separated themselves from the other schools that were interested in you?
So with UTEP, it was obviously like the culture, you know what I mean, with the coaches. Coach Briggs, he's been recruiting me for a minute now, you know what I mean? Even when I was at Triton, he was recruiting me. And he's just kind of like, he's just something special to our family, you know? Like, he had a big part of playing it. Coach Golden, he really loved me. He came down, he was the first coach to come down here. And you know what I mean? Like, that's the biggest thing, like, in this transfer portal stuff. Like, I think kids go to places where they, you know what I mean, where it's all about the money or the nice stuff and this and that. Like, at the end of the day, like UTEP, they show love to me, and they want me to be me, you know. And then when it comes to the city, I was there before. Like, I see myself doing some type of fundraisers for schools, you know what I mean, doing things like that, helping the community out, just being a big part of that, you know, outside the basketball world. And then when it comes to basketball, just playing for the city, you know. So, like, that just helped me, like, make my decision to go to UTEP. Like, it was everything that played up, like the coaches, the city, the basketball, it just all fit. It fit for me.
Now, on your visit, Devin, what is it about the city that impressed you? I know you got a chance to go out and watch the El Paso Chihuahuas. What was it like catching a baseball game and, you know, seeing the city as a whole?
I think it's just, you know, like I said, I lived here before, so, you know, some of the things were kind of new. Like, it's new things out here. Like watching Chihuahuas, like the support they got, you know, I mean, was unbelievable. It was, I think every seat was probably filled in there. Like, I think the best thing about the city is that everybody just likes to have fun. You know, I mean, I don't think anybody's trying to do anything significant to get somebody in trouble. None of that. It's just everybody's trying to have fun. Like, it's something going on at night. Everybody's trying to do that. You know what I mean? Like, the baseball, basketball, football, the support of UTEP, the people of UTEP, that's what makes me, you know, I mean, love El Paso. So, like,
now, you've got a Mount Zion connection as well, because I believe there's a couple of minors on the roster in Otis Frazier III and Elijah Jones, who also played at Mount Zion Prep. And did you at that time have a chance to team up with them in those years?
Yeah, so Otis was, I think, 2 years before me. Me and Elijah played on the same team. So me and Elijah are real close. You know, we talked about this, you know, before I even came on a visit. You know, but me and him, really, we teamed up. I know Elijah's potential. I know what he can do on the court. I know his things he has to work on. He knows the things I have to work on. I think that's the great thing about me going down there, that we can push each other and get better and help UTEP get where they need to be.
All right.
And that's in the tournament.
All right, Devin, who inspires you on and off the court? Okay, so like your NBA inspiration, maybe your off-the-court inspiration.
So – on the court, you know, I got a couple. So Will Barton and his brother Antonio Barton, they kind of inspired me a lot. You know what I mean? Just obviously, like I said, like my first basketball game I watched live was at UTEP, them playing UTEP. So like, obviously they play a big part in that. And then Nate Mason, he went to Minnesota for 4 years, and now he's over in Puerto Rico doing real good, playing professional basketball. He's a big inspiration. And then off the court is my dad. Like, My dad served 25 years in the military. You know, he was in the Army, you know, like, he missed my birth. He missed a couple of my brother's birth because he was over there serving for the country. You know, like, just the things he do, like, it inspires me. Like, he doesn't even understand that, like, I look up to him so much, you know, because the way he carries himself, the way he talks to people, the way he treats people, and, you know, the way he works, you know, like, he's installed so much into me. Like, just being a good kid, like, just the simple things, making it bed when you wake up, doing things like that, telling people yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. You know, when it comes to working out, you got to be an early bird. Like, he would wake, seventh grade, wake me up 5 a.m. to go run 3 miles before school.
Wow.
Like, just things like that. Like, he just inspired me so much to just to be a better young man and growing up in this world, you know. So, like, obviously I got the basketball. My dad's just a big inspiration to me.
Is your dad still active military?
No, so he's actually retired. Like I said, 25 years. So right now he's in Jordan. He's overseas, and he's like a military contractor. So, but he's out now.
Well, hopefully he can get himself back to El Paso to start watching you play for the Miners.
Oh yeah, I know he definitely will make it. You know what I mean? So you don't got to worry about that.
Now, Chris asked on Twitter and X, what is your ideal position? What do you feel most comfortable playing? And I know you talked about playing the point earlier in the conversation. Miners have the freshman of the year also, and David Terrell Jr., who plays the point. So when you arrived here, we're kind of talking about your role. Is that really what Joe Golding and the staff told you, that they kind of want you to play the point along with David and have the two of you almost be those, you know, those two point guards on the roster?
Yeah, so like I said, my natural position is a point guard. You know, like, you know, I take pride in that. You know, the point guard spot. You know, I mean, be able to control the game, be able to get my teammates involved, knowing when to score, knowing when to pass, knowing what to say, being a leader. You know, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that play into being a point guard, on and off the court. And I think I just take pride in that type of stuff. And I that's where I feel most natural at.
Wow.
You know what I mean, like I said, my dad's a leader, and he was a leader in the Army his whole time in there. And he has thought that into me. So being a leader, I think that's what the point guard is, being a leader. And Coach Golden, they expressed it. They expressed that they want me to be the one. They want me to control what's going on, make sure, you know, be it. I'm kind of an older guy now. I'm a junior going to this, played 3 years. So, like, I understand what I got to do when it comes to that. And with DTR, David Terrell, great player, great kid. Like, we're going to work together. I'm bringing the ball. Like I said, I can play off the ball too, but me bringing the ball, I got this on him creating offense. So, like, we're going to work together. But Coach Gordon made sure to let me know that they want us to play the one.
I'll say this, too. You can never have enough point guards. And we've seen some UTEP teams in recent years that really struggled because they didn't have a point guard. So as far as I'm concerned, you talking about how comfortable you are as both a leader and just somebody taking the ball up, that's the kind of answer a lot of Miner fans are looking for, because they realize the history with point guards at this university. We just got, we just saw Tim Hardaway go into the Hall of Fame last year in terms of what he was able to contribute, Nate Tiny Archibald. There is a long, long lineage of great point guards that have played here at this university.
Right, yeah, like, that's something else, you know what I mean, like kind of draw me towards that. Like you said, them guys, they point guard, like, I think that's probably one of the most important positions on the court, you know, you're especially the coach when you're on the court. I mean, the coach can't play for you. You can draw the plays up, but somebody got to be able to control it all. And like you said, I think it's real important. You know, them guys, like, they set a foundation. And so now it's just time for me to go out there and make things work and carry on what they did.
Devin, you'll be in El Paso in June. You know, everybody will be excited to see you once you get here to town. For those listening to this conversation right now, what can you tell Miner fans about what you're hoping to bring here at UTEP?
You know, it's just like I said, like, just that leadership, you know. But when it comes to me in that basketball court, you know, and our team and what we got going on, UTEP was so close to going to tournament last year. And I'm this year, we're going to make the tournament, and we're going to make a run in the tournament. It's not, you know what I mean? We're going to win the conference. We're going to win the tournament. Or not win. We're going to make a run in the tournament and do big things, you know. I'm going to bring a lot. I'm going to bring a lot of energy. I'm going to be a positive guy, things like that. I'm also going to bring off-the-court type of things. Like, God, like, I'm a God-fearing man. I love God, you know what I mean? Like, spreading the gospel, stuff like that. So, you know, the minor fans, like, we're going to be okay, you know? Don't worry about nothing. We're going to be okay. We're going to have fun next year. We're going to win games. You know what I mean? It's going to be up and downs, but at the end of the day, we're going to end up on top. So that's what they need to expect.
Now, that's honestly probably the best answer to end this interview. Unfortunately, another question came in during the interview for you, so we've got to extend it with one more question. This comes from Oscar at Oscar Jr. 915. He wants to know on Twitter and X, what is something you want to work on with your game this coming season?
So I think the biggest thing that, you know, that I think that I need to work on is definitely the IQ part, you know, being able to read defenses before things happen, you know, coming off screens, be able to read the pick and roll, things like that. IQ even on defense, I know how to play defense, but it's still more to learn. So I think it's just basically just learning the game, expanding my mind on the game, and becoming a student in the game. That's what I need to work on.
Well said. All right, Devin. We'll look forward to seeing you this summer, meeting you here in the studio, and terrific stuff. Enjoyed the conversation, and we'll look forward to seeing you as a UTEP Miner this upcoming season.
Appreciate you guys, man. Go Miners.
Devin Barnes joining us here as we continue 43 past. We'll wrap up hour two in a moment. Stay with us. 45 minutes left. 600 ESPN El Paso.